Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your fit pick at the drive-thru of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica. Before we get into the topic this week, I actually have a question, and I kind of hope that people will jump on the group and express opinions or email, whatever's easiest. I've had a few comments recently that people would prefer to not be on Facebook, not to not be on the Facebook group that we have, just on Facebook in general. And I wonder, are people wanting to be on Discord or something else? No idea how to do that, etc. But I would love to hear broader opinions about that, because I do get the sense that there has been some resistance to being on Facebook for the group. And so I would like to be in a setup where everybody feels comfortable and where we can still keep the same kind of conversations going. My original resistance to Discord is maybe it's like a little bit too fast-paced and chatty and less post-driven, less topic-driven, but maybe that's what folks want. Anyway, I'd love to hear more. Maybe someone can start a thread about it, or feel free to drop an email if you don't want to publicly post anything. Send us an email, podcast@nytimes.com.
John?
Yeah?
I vote for something other than Facebook, since I've been off of Facebook for 2 years now.
Okay, well, there's one vote.
I would join in a heartbeat.
Pedro,
I would join in a heartbeat.
Are you on Discord? Are you on Discord?
I am on Discord. I am totally on Discord. Yes.
Oh my God.
Okay. I am on Discord. So that's my vote, but I'm not a decision maker.
Okay, if we do switch to Discord, the caveat is that someone is going to have to teach me how to use Discord. I don't know, you know. I don't know who that person's going to be. That's the caveat.
You know what? I don't use Discord. Sorry. I was thinking of something else. Totally something else.
My gosh. And again, I aged 10 years and 20 seconds on this episode. Jeez. Well, thanks for that. Speaking of feeling old, okay, you guys might be up. You're certainly up on Avatars, you know, whether it's the Travis Scott Fortnite concert or Lil Miquella or any number of quasi-real music or music-adjacent experiences. And sometimes I wonder if at a certain point there isn't going to be the need for a human musician at all. And a lot of the work of being a famous person is like kind of a drag. And I'm starting to see famous people use avatars in ways that kind of eliminate some of the scut work, you know, whether it's sponsored ads or maybe at some point it'll be press. Avatars can be convenient, but they also portend a future that may be less and less reliant upon kind of human celebrities as we know them. Now, this is something I've been thinking about, and I was very excited when Alyssa Bereznak in The Ringer wrote a whole kind of pocket history of how avatars have been deployed over the last, let's say, 10 to 15 years, but really focused on some of the ways that during the pandemic, when obviously famous people basically can't leave their homes, just like the rest of us, that they have increasingly been turning to avatars for live performances and potentially for other new ways to interact with their fans on apps like TikTok and so on and so forth. I think I made a joke in my Travis Scott McDonald's burger notebook that Travis is like a good example of someone who like seems to want to be a full-time avatar. Like, he's not a person that's like seems particularly excited about being famous and doing all the work that actually comes with being famous. It's a much bigger flex for him to be like, yeah, my avatar did a concert in Fortnite and my action figure self did a commercial with McDonald's. So maybe that's the future. Maybe that's actually what Travis's fame portends. Anyway, to talk about all of these things, to talk about our likely dystopian future, to talk about how we lionize people only to render them as digital versions of themselves and obviate the need for their human forms, had to bring on Alyssa Bereznak. Alyssa is a staff writer at The Ringer. Alyssa wrote an article a couple weeks ago about all these current technological shifts that are happening and also the history of avatars. And it was mildly unsettling. So joining us, it's the most extreme couponer. Alyssa, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am very well, very happy to have you here. Alyssa, before we do this, can I just briefly plug your recently completed podcast? Can I mention that very quickly?
Oh, please. I would love if you plugged something I did.
So first of all, this is a podcast that is about real people featuring real journalists interviewing real sources. No avatars that I'm aware of in this podcast. Alyssa did a multi-part series about HQ trivia. It's called Boom Bust. It was a very detailed look. If you are a Scott Rogowski fan, shouts to Scott. If you are in that, if you are an HQD, yeah, I said it. Alyssa went deep on all the tortured history of that game, app, company, etc. Anyway, check that out. It's very, very good. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, thanks for plugging it. It's not just a story about HQ trivia. It's a story about why the tech industry is the way it is in some ways.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Right. So also, much like the subject of today's episode, like also potentially techno-pessimistic and dystopian. So very, very exciting. Okay. Can you talk to me a little bit about what prompted you to go deep on this subject? Because obviously we're in pandemic, we're in quarantine. There is no better time for artists to experiment with virtual versions of themselves, to send those avatars out on the quote unquote road, you know, to jam them into other people's phones. Was that the inspiration, or was it something that you've been brewing for a while?
I think that I had just seen a lot of people being like virtual concerts. And I read in a newsletter that there were some companies that were popping up around that. And they were presented as just like sort of practical band-aids to the pandemic. But I really thought of them as sort of the beginning of something different, because I'm not quite sure we're ever going to go back to the way things were after this is all over. I think this is maybe in some way the beginning of a very interesting decade. And I'll just put it like that to not be too pessimistic. And yeah, like if it's not a pandemic keeping us home, maybe it's a hurricane, maybe it's a natural disaster, like climate change is happening, we're experiencing it. I'm here in LA and the fires have made that very clear. So I think I just thought like, oh, this is actually a tool that's going to change the way we consume celebrities. And I focused in on two specific companies, actually three. One was Jadu, which records sort of these 3D holograms that you can drop into Instagrams or TikToks of musicians who are dancing around and you can interact with them.
I just want to say I downloaded that app after reading your piece and I did a video on it, and it was among the most unsettling experiences I've had on my phone.
Who was your video?
I picked Omar Apollo, who is a musician who I like and who is in my kitchen as we speak.
Yeah,
it was very it was very unsettling. Anyway, we'll come back to it. Jadu, that's Jadu. Please.
Yeah,
please
that's
continue.
Jadu. Then there's Genies, which is more sort of emoji-like and illustrated digital avatar that celebrities can use to sort of drop in their Instagram feeds and stand in for advertisements if they don't feel like getting up that morning. And then there's Wave, which kind of functions as a digital touring company. And they go from platform to platform, from like Twitch to TikTok, and they put on concerts. And the most recent one they did was actually with The Weeknd and TikTok. That was huge.
Now, each of these companies in their own way specialize in outsourcing the work of fame, basically offloading some of these key tasks that we ordinarily would think come with being a famous person. Now, some of them in a more proactive way of doing a full concert. But your opening scene in the story is you're at the Jadu offices with Cookie Kawai. And we open the episode with Vibe, which is Cookie Kawai's kind of big TikTok hit song. Explain a little bit about that process, what you watched happen at the Jadu offices.
it was a studio shoot like you would be on a commercial or something. But instead, the main place where they were shooting was just like a giant bright green room. And there was marking on the floor for where the subject, in this case, Cookie, was supposed to stand. And there were just like a bunch of tiny little cameras all around her. I, at one point, actually got to stand in this little like circle, and it was extremely stressful to me.
Wait, were you being filmed? Like, were they motion capturing?
Yeah, the CEO took like a 3D image of me that he said he would send to me, but I just actually never even asked about it because I was just like, I don't want that.
Yeah.
So like, kudos to all the artists who are like confident enough to be able to hold like the stare of that many cameras, because wow.
Fair. And yeah, and in your piece you say it's 100 some odd cameras. It seems like it's essentially the next generation of motion capture that, you know, you would have in a video game, like a basketball player video game, NBA 2K or stuff like this, like where people are fully digitized into avatars, famous people,
yeah,
in video game settings.
Exactly, exactly. And so what they do is they film with the artist, Cookie, in this case. She was filming for 15 seconds and like sort of the most recognizable 15 seconds of her hit single Vibe.
Right, which is in fact longer than 15 seconds. Just, you know.
It is. Though from watching a bunch of TikToks, you wouldn't guess
that. You would not know that. You would not know that. But yes, it is in fact a full song.
She's dancing to the song, but not as if she's the only one performing. She's dancing as if she's assuming there will be someone there in the frame with her. And the whole idea is that they can get something that will fit into these 15 seconds, which is the average length of a TikTok. I think you can go a little bit longer sometimes, but that's usually what the length is, so that it can go viral on the platform, which is, as you talked about in your last episode, is the place where people are discovering music now.
And also the thing is, and you mentioned this in your piece, and this is something that we've talked about on podcast a lot and I've written about a lot. The primary issue for a musician who wants to break a song on TikTok, or perhaps worse, for a musician who inadvertently has a song blow up on TikTok, which is certainly a thing that happens quite a lot, is that in no way is the musician the person that is blowing up. It is purely the audio. It is purely the soundtrack, and it's soundtracks, hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of videos where other people are the stars of those videos. And so if you are a famous person or an aspiring famous person, that may not work for you. Maybe you get a check, a royalty check from streaming numbers or something like that, but it does not work to increase your public profile. This Jadu thing really is meant to fill the gap. Or bridge the gap, I should say.
Completely. After Cookie's shoot, I sat down with her and she said exactly that. She said when her song went viral on TikTok, she was kind of stuck being like, oh, I need to comment on every random teen's post to be like, thanks for using my song. Which is, I mean, you know, because initially when a user uploads a sound, it's not tagged with the correct tag. So like once they got that under control, she got a little bit more credit, but it was still very hard for her to put her stamp on it. So it makes sense that she would sort of want to be there in the music video that is starring someone else like Addison Rae or something.
Those are, or at least have become, the music video proxies. Like we used to think like, oh, you have a popular song, let's say on the radio, but nobody knows what you look like. Okay, you make a music video and then people will watch it, whether on MTV or BET or later on YouTube, and then be like, oh, that's what that person looks like. That's that person's vibe or energy. Now your energy or vibe is literally being determined completely out of your hands. It's being taken over by all the users of TikTok who are determining how your song gets used.
In a way, it's being appropriated for their own purposes, which is, I mean, it's the powerful thing about TikTok, but it's not great for artists in a lot of ways. And so Jadu exists to sort of meet that space that's kind of being created.
Those videos, like, so the time I tried to use it, I made a video, I downloaded it. Conceptually, I could upload it to Instagram or to TikTok or any of these other platforms. But most of the artists who have done work with them from a music perspective are a little bit lower level. Is this something that more famous people are doing? Because if you, let's say you had, oh, I don't know, Megan and Cardi doing the number one TikTok WAP dance. And you had that video, which you could then insert into you and your friends doing the WAP dance and then reposting that. That seems to me to be like a multi-billion dollar blockbuster idea.
This startup, Jadu, is really new. Like, they launched this year. So it's possible that they could get there. I mean, I think that they've already done a really great job when it comes to picking strategically who the right sort of Gen Z stars are. It's not just musicians. They have actual TikTok influencers as well. There's this like dreamy ceramicist, Dax Newman.
First ceramics mention on podcast. Cool, you know, good crossover content. Yeah, yeah.
Glad I could be the one to do it. So he's an example of someone who isn't necessarily trying to, you know, sell a song. He's just selling who he is. So I think that they're building things up strategically. They want to get enough exposure that these bigger stars are going to actually sit down or come to their studio and film something. But there's other issues there. There's issues of ownership. Right now, Jadu owns the avatar. And, you know, I spoke to the CEO. He mentioned that it's possible in the future that they could sell their avatars to the labels and things like that.
I see. Okay, so when Cookie Kawai goes in to film this video, she actually does not retain any ownership of the product.
No, and that's different company to company. So Genies, they insist that the celebrity gets to own their avatar. And I think their business model is essentially charging for the work it takes to manipulate that avatar so that it can be arranged for an ad campaign or something of that nature.
So talk a little bit about Genies.
Genies is definitely more like sort of was born out of the vibe of the Memojis and the Bitmojis that we all use to communicate on our phones. And they are definitely much more focused on brand sponsorships, advertising. You know, it's like there's an endless amount of money that a celebrity could make if they accepted every single SponCon offer that they got. You know,
oh, like, I know. Trust me. I know. That's true.
Yeah. I mean, just imagine all the waist trainers you could advertise. And so the idea is that they can sort of multiply their potential by cloning themselves with these illustrated avatars. And the idea, I think, for the company is that they want to formalize that this is the place to go to do that. That this is what it looks like when you're like, I can't be there myself because I can't do my hair. I'm getting a nose job. I'm, you know, off somewhere else, like on an island, like send my digital avatar. And they want to be that company. So that's their thing. And then Wave is much more like, what does the platform we're working with look like? And how do we design an entire experience, including an avatar that sort of measures up to that? So you saw that with the Weeknd's performance on TikTok.
Let's listen to a little The Weeknd, who, I mean, even though The Weeknd, this record has been huge for months, it doesn't feel huge in the way that other Weeknd songs have been huge because I have not heard it out in any public group setting. So let's listen to Blinding Lights by The Weeknd and imagine you are surrounded by 25,000 people also enjoying this record.
I've been trying to call. I've been on my own for long enough. Maybe you can show me how to love. Maybe I'm going through a drought. You don't even have to do too much. You can turn me on with just a touch, baby.
I actually did not see the virtual Weeknd show on TikTok. I was not one of the 2 million unique users who checked in on it. What was that like?
Oh, you missed out.
Apparently. And what was that like?
Concert and how of the season.
And how credible was the avatar?
You know, they didn't even try and make it look like the Weeknd. He has been experimenting in his entire campaign for his album with different avatars. And this one was pretty cartoonish. It had the same outfit. He's sort of this uniform outfit he's been wearing in each of his sort of digital appearances, which is like the red suit and the big 70s sunglasses. And Doja Cat showed up for like a quick little appearance. And the whole idea was that you are always interacting. So it was giving you prompts like, should The Weeknd lick a toad? And you had to type in yes if you wanted him to lick the toad, or no if you for some reason were a huge nerd and didn't want him to.
So frog talk was in the building is what you're saying.
Yes. And then like basically they kind of used the stage as a center point and him being the center point, but then they kind of moved you around. Like it was like you're moving through this sort of futuristic buildings, and it was all very much in line with the imagery of his album and what he's put forth there. But it was way more about user interaction. Sometimes you would even see your handle up there, like a comment that you wrote in the comment section would like show up in the visuals.
With some of these things where, you know, you're kind of giving prompts to the avatar, did you get the sense that there was the potential to, for lack of a better term, abuse the avatar, to put the avatar in an unexpected or unanticipated or potentially awkward situation?
Like the way that I used to do with my Sims?
This is not that kind of podcast. I don't know what you're talking about. But definitely yes, that.
Obviously, The Weeknd had a final say about what his avatar would do. So, no, I'm sure that they had to run the licking the toad thing by him.
Yeah. Right.
the answer would be very much no. But I think the user sort of visuals that show your handle up in the visuals is kind of a demonstration of the user being the star on TikTok and them understanding that and including it in the performance.
Does that kind of fit in with the Travis Scott Fortnite concert, where it's kind of, in principle, it's similar to what The Weeknd is doing, but Fortnite is obviously a pre-existing environment with pre-existing parasocial or purely social relationships, you know, in the game? How are those two things similar and or different?
It was 100% similar in the sense that the performance was really cool. It was these awesome visuals that sort of changed your surroundings as a player there. Mm-hmm. So at one point he was underwater. At one point he was like giant and they could jump on him and the sky was changing. But it was very much like you were still the focus. What you were doing on the screen mattered more than what Travis Scott was doing, which I found really interesting. There is this competing aspect there.
And that's pretty consistent with, you know, late period social media culture, meme celebrity culture, where ultimately the famous person can be the axis around which your engagement revolves, but you are manipulating Drake in some way. You know, you're making a meme of him, you're using a lyric of his, like you're using it for your purposes. Like Drake is merely
participatory.
Yeah, exactly. So you're saying both these things, and especially the Fortnite thing, ultimately honored the value of the individual's experience, like didn't kind of decenter the individual user or follower.
Right, exactly. And I mean, that's the smart thing to do. Like it was the same with the 100 Gex concert in Minecraft. I mean, they were like literal blocks. Like you couldn't even really tell who they were.
Gex.
Yes. Ah. Love them.
That's just, oh man. Are we going to play some 100 Gex?
I mean, I'm down.
Let's play the ringtone remix, which is off the remix record from this year, which has Rico Nasty, Charlie XCX, Caro Caro Benito on it. So let's play the ringtone remix, 100 Gex. When he calls me, I go crazy. Call me with my friends, it doesn't faze me. Windows down, riding in the SUV. And I'm smelling champagne all on my screen. Screaming, what's the screeching? 100 miles per hour. He let me cause I'm wild. Get my phone in the shower. Ring, ring, gonna let it ring out. Sounds so good when I turn it up loud. My boy's got his own ringtone. It's the only one I know, it's the only one I know. My boy's got his own ringtone. It's the only one I know, it's the only one I know. I did have a thought when I was dealing with the Jadu app, where I was like, okay, you're going to have some very famous people on here at some point, or at least engaging in technology, whether it's this app or some other competitor app, where you are going to have, you know, a Cardi B, a Justin Bieber, a Drake, a Kanye, a whoever. And there was something almost, in seeing the video that I made, there was something almost like deepfakey about it. And I was like, huh, there's really maybe not, maybe the reason this isn't moving faster or hasn't spread to the most famous of celebrities yet is because maybe you could abuse the avatars in some way. Maybe it's too much source material. Maybe it could be used for political purposes, for explicit purposes, or who knows what. Is that something that came up in your conversations with them, or was it on your mind at all when you're seeing kind of how good this technology is? Because ultimately, I thought the technology was very good. The quote-unquote hologram was like very crisp, very manipulable, and I was like, oh, we're like not far away from sort of like what we think of as deepfake territory.
Because Jadu kind of survives off of access, I think that that's obviously something that they're going to have to negotiate before they ever try it. And it's not in their interest to just like all of a sudden go willy-nilly and like make a celebrity's avatar go crazy or something. But that being said, the CEO, Asad Malik, he actually told me that they take like a T photo, sort of a T scan of a person's entire body before they do the actual recording. In a way, it's like on a rig that they could manipulate, like they could move your arms and legs and make it do things that you didn't do. And so, yeah, I mean, it's possible that like when a new TikTok dance comes out, instead of like that musician doing the TikTok dance, they can just be like, hey, Jadu, like make my avatar do that TikTok dance. And hopefully it's not as complicated as the WAP dance, because wow, good luck with that.
Yeah, right. I don't think there are enough cameras in the world to fully capture all the angles that would be required for that. But yeah, but that's what it like. Yes, it got me thinking of that. And then it got me thinking of like, oh, a bad faith actor could do this in a real problematic way.
He even mentioned to me that in the early stages of his company, they had reached out to Charli D'Amelio and she was interested in making an avatar, but she and her team and her parents decided against it because they were just concerned about whether or not there would be an abusive element to that. And that you already see that on TikTok with the duets, like people are actually kind of mean on duets. So that, I mean, that is the concern.
Except Larry. Larry is very nice. But yes, I know it is interesting as duets have become more widespread, how it is kind of calcified a certain streak of cruelty that does kind of course through TikTok in the comments, and how people have started to like build entire personalities around this kind of like meta cruelty. So yes, I can see that being something that the D'Amelio clan would be like, yeah, we're cool on that for now.
Right, right. So those are the two issues.
Can we talk a little bit about sort of the broader history of avatars? And obviously, I'm thinking, you know, you mentioned Second Life, you just brought up Sims. The last 6 months, people are having big Animal Crossing moments, etc. I should confess up front, I've never done any of these things. I'm sure that they are just unmitigated blasts. I have not done any of them. So can you both talk about a little bit of the arc of how we arrived at kind of the widespread accepting of avatars? And also, if you want to talk a little bit about your personal toxicity history with avatars, that'd be great.
Sure. Yeah. For every millennial, pretty much we've had a whole history of avatars that we haven't even really realized or registered, because all of that was just fleeting. It wasn't like you were going to keep that or it was going to follow you around on a social account. It just existed there on that computer game you used or on that login you used. Even like the avatars to get onto your family computer when like people still had family computers in living rooms. That's technically an avatar. So first, it was really impersonal. Games like Second Life said, hey, what if this was a way that you could create a new identity and have a new community online? And while people were really interested in that, I wouldn't necessarily say it took off in a way that we all embraced. And then emojis started popping up. And that was really like the first sort of visual shorthand that led us into full-on customizable emojis, like Bitmoji. Did you ever use a Bitmoji?
I did not. My mom is like heavy on that. Maybe I did it and saved it and never used it. I don't know. Maybe I'm not a joyful person. I can't like put my I can't put my finger on it. Or maybe I'm just waiting for the tech to catch up to all the finer detailed points, you know, in my facial hair. I don't know.
Yeah, really capture your face. I get it.
You know, maybe the tech needs to call me. Maybe they need to call me to make sure they get everything correct. but no, I've never personally, to my recollection, deployed one. But, you know, like I said, my mom and any number of friends certainly do. I think Karen, my editor, I believe she did it for a bit. And every now and again, we'll still drop one in the text chat just to kind of like, I don't remind me of 2018. Like, I don't know. but no, are you heavy on that? Are you still dropping those?
I used to have those. I actually just stopped using them now because if I need to truly show my emotion, I'll just take a picture of myself doing that. But yeah, I think that they were really helpful in that moment because we were really, for the first time, super connected to our phones. Our phones had more processing power. Group chats were a thing. And that was just like overwhelming in the sense that you needed to sort of reaffirm your emotion in addition to text, sort of add a human gesture in some way. And Bitmojis were just really helpful for doing that because we had a new digital existence that like we kind of had to throw some things at. And then, you know, I mentioned in my story that celebrities started co-opting the customizable emoji. Kim Kardashian had her own emoji pack that you could buy.
Kimoji.
Yes. Yeah. Do you ever participate in that?
I might have been Kimoji proximate at some point in my life. It's possible.
Snapchat bought Bitmoji and now you just use them in your Snapchats. And Apple made its own Memojis where you can quite literally use a front-facing camera to have a Memoji sort of mimic your facial movements. And you can lip sync with them and all of those things. And people send those all the time. So
yeah, that's not creepy at all.
It's weird. It's just normal now. And I think that it's really helpful to look at the history to see how far we've come because things start to become normalized really quickly on the internet without us realizing.
Yeah, no, this is where like my inner 70-year-old comes out where I'm just like, y'all can't have my facial identification. No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
And fair enough. Like it's, but they're probably not doing great stuff with that, but you know, it's what people do.
These avatars that we're talking about, the Apple Memojis and these kind of personalized avatars, they're still, you know, they're not celebrity duplicates, but they're individual duplicates. They're meant to quite literally just represent us. Where the creep comes in, and you mentioned this in your story a little bit, is when you start to move into the realm of like the wholly invented or the avatars that are not actually avatars of anything. They're just styled like avatars. And I'm talking about Lil Miquella, Hatsune Miku. Let's get into that a little bit because that's, you know, there was a lot of energy around Hatsune Miku a few years ago. If you don't know, Hatsune Miku is I believe Vocaloid is the term, essentially a Japanese pop star that is a computer program.
Yes, yes.
And then Lil Miquella is the product of a branding agency and does brand deals where Lil Miquella makes out with Bella Hadid for Calvin Klein or something.
She also sings. She also sings.
Yes, I'm choosing to ignore that part of the Lil Miquella catalog because as a music critic, I have to set the line somewhere. You know, like I would almost rather listen to a Dixie D'Amelio song than a Lil Miquella song. And that's the challenge. So here you have entirely virtual characters. Are these characters being brought into existence maybe to kind of smooth the path for us to accept avatar versions of ourselves or avatar versions of famous people? Or is this portending a celebrity ecosystem in which the famous people, quote unquote, are not people? They are just inventions. They are algorithms. They are Vocaloids.
I mean, I think both of them are first and foremost an effort to make money.
Sure. Yes. I don't mean to diminish the raw capitalist urge of either of these things. My bad. If you are responsible for the creation of either of those two things, I am sorry for denying you your truth. My bad.
No, I mean, I think it's a great question just because it's just hard to know what to make of these things, whether or not they're just a kind of fluke. It's going to be like a novelty that we forget, or if this is essentially sort of the first stages of an avatar revolution. And I would say that they are proof that you can make money from a persona online. a persona that's not connected back to anyone. But I do think that there's still a leg up that humans in entertainment have, which is that people care about a story they can relate to. And if, you know, like if you're listening to, I don't know, like Beyonce's music, you can understand that where she came from, what informs her sound, and the visual aesthetics that she chooses to put out there. And you can say, oh, that applies to my life in XYZ ways. Or, oh, that taught me something that I didn't quite understand about another person's experience. And for the most part, I would say that like avatars like Lil Miquela have not necessarily transcended that sort of roadblock. They can be really compelling visual models of cool new, like, I don't know, like what's the coolest brand now? Cool new Supreme clothes. I'm really not that hip. Yeah. I buy like shirts with cactuses on them. So Off-White, I don't know.
I'm not even going to answer. I'm just going to leave all this. This is good.
Oh God. I'm like really clowning on myself right now. Anyway, so what I mean to say is that they can be these vehicles for the newest thing because they can very closely collaborate with the hottest brands and make those connections and portray them in exactly the way the brand wants, because it's a negotiation between an agency and an advertiser as opposed to a human being and an advertiser. And that's advantageous economically.
And also the model, you know, and you talked to Sinead Bovell in your piece, the model is in essence almost an inconvenience. The model is too sentient to be completely a pliant part of that financial transaction, correct?
Well, yeah. I mean, a model is inconvenient because they need to be styled. They might not agree to wear something fed. Yeah. Treated humanely.
Yes, right.
And if you can generate an image of a model wearing like your entire catalog of fall clothing, then you've saved a lot of money, especially when it comes to like e-commerce stuff where you just need a picture of the top on a model. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a good shortcut and it saves a lot of resources. But when it comes to like reaching that next level of relationship with a human being, you know, because ultimately celebrity is you speak to people in a way that they really feel like you're speaking to them specifically, then I don't think we've gotten there with avatars yet. And we could, but we're not there yet.
Speaking of Sinead, shout out to my boy MAG. Here's the last question, because I was thinking about the concert business over the last 6 months. And as you mentioned at the beginning, perhaps we're at the outset of, we're not going to retreat to where we were 18 months ago. We're at stage one of some new iteration of how people experience live events, quote unquote, live or quasi live events. Given what you saw in the reporting of this piece and the people that you talked to, how far down the road are we from, and here's a hypothetical, and again, it's a moneymaker, someone should make this and give me points on this. How far away are we from saying, you know, I've got some friends at the house, it's Friday night. Hey, you know what we'd love to do is like, we'd love to watch a Beyonce concert. And yeah, like the Coachella show, that was great. And yeah, like the Homecoming tour, like that was great. And the Formation tour, like cool. But actually what I'd love to do is kind of make a playlist of like my 20 favorite Beyonce records and then type those in, organize it, and then a kind of holographic version of Beyonce is available to be put on a screen or projected onto a wall or into my kitchen, and I'm watching Beyonce perform those songs in a personalized selection. Not personalized to me, John, but just in the sense that I have set all the instructions out. How far down the road is that? And who wants to invest with me?
I mean, please count me in. But I do think that we're far from that just because artists like Beyonce, who have that reach and are larger than life, have a huge amount of control on their image. And I don't think would ever allow for that kind of thing to happen. So I think it's going to take probably a lot more like super digital natives to come up in the music industry. You know, right now there are a lot of like really cool DIY creator programs that allow people to make their own illustrated avatars like Blender or AR kits that can kind of map the face and that are pretty open source. Like anyone can really use them. So it's possible that there could even be like, I don't know, you know, I was talking to Mac Boucher, who's Grimes' brother, and he is a partner at Jadu, and he helped with her War Nymph avatar. And he said, like, the next sort of famous avatar that's out there isn't going to be made by a company like Brud, or it's not going to be like a character on our Instagram. It's going to be like conceived of by a 10-year-old on Blender. And I thought that was really smart, because I think it's like, we need to wait for the actual digital natives who like grew up with these tools and who understand the social media avenues that they're going to be for, to sort of come in there and make that known. I mean, that being said, like maybe Kim Kardashian is working on something like you proposed, but she doesn't really have any performances to offer us. So it might be like makeup tutorials.
She has 20 seasons of Keeping Up with the Kardashians. Are you kidding? You kidding me? I would love to have some. I would love to have some rare Jonathan Cheban content just unfolding in like my second bathroom, like just at random times of the day. You kidding me? That's like the ultimate pop-up experience.
I think there was an SNL like parody that was like sports highlights, but just for reality TV. And we have yet to get that, but I would love that, because I don't ever want to, you know, hear about someone's sock line again.
Yo, first of all, peace to Rob. We pray for you. we pray for you constantly. In regards to that 10-year-old who's going to invent something that is going to change this entire ecosystem, I live in fear of that moment. Alyssa, thank you so much, Alyssa Bresnak, for coming through and blessing us.
Thanks for having me.
That's our show. Thank you again, Alyssa. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us, podcast@nytimes.com. Get on the Facebook group. Subscribe to podcasts anywhere you get your audio content, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, etc., etc. Our producer, as ever, is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. And to go out this week, let's all live in our virtual present slash future. If you are as broken as I am and spend a tremendous amount of time on TikTok, you will know that of late, there's been a Hatsune Miku track that has been quite popping in any number of videos. So I figure let's listen to a little bit of that to get a sense of what the hybrid human future is going to be like. So this is a record. It's called Miku. It's by Anna Monoguchi, which is an American band, and it features Hatsune Miku. You may have the dance seared on your brain. Miku, Miku, you can call her Miku. We're out. Miku, Miku, you can call me Miku.